This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Journalist Richard Cohn is a former senior producer for CBS News and CNN and has covered all kinds of stories, including war. But in his new book, Blindsided, he reports on himself and his own psychological battle with illness. 30 years ago, when he was 25, he was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. At the time, he was an up-and-coming producer for ABC and was also finishing a documentary for the PBS news show, The McNeil-Lehrer Report. The documentary was about, ironically enough, the politics of disability. On top of MS, which has left him legally blind and with limbs that don't function well, Cohn has had a couple of bouts with colon cancer. Before writing his new memoir, he read his own story as told in the tabloids and the personality press, which were interested in his marriage to Meredith Vieira, one of the hosts of The View. Cohn says that it made him crazy to read headlines like "Secret Family Tragedy of TV Host Meredith Vieira" and "Beautiful TV Host Meredith Vieira Hides Heartbreaking Secret."
I looked at those magazines.
Yeah.
I looked at those tabloids. And given the culture that we're in, I guess it should be no surprise that in their own reductionist way, they had to make Meredith into a martyr and they had to make me into a victim. And for a long time, there was a zone of privacy because I really didn't talk about it. And even People magazine at one point did a fairly long profile of Meredith with photos and the kids and everything. And they never mentioned my health problems. And I thought, you know, this is pretty cool. And I think, so I was quite startled to see it in the Star and some of these other publications. And what bothered me the most is that as Meredith and I have struggled to maintain a normal life and to make sure our kids understand that these problems have to be put in perspective and that we can survive them as a family, you know, there are the magazines and the newspapers trumpeting the tragedy. And I think what started to push me over the edge, as long as it's just the tabloids, you know, you can shrug it off and look the other way. But some of the more mainstream publications, magazines, ladies, women's magazines in particular, such as Ladies Home Journal, really focused on the word tragedy and talked about Meredith's tears and really presented our lives in a way that was skewed toward the overly dramatic. And it bothered me because, A, it made me self-conscious, and, B, what kind of a lesson is that to the kids, or message is that to the kids? You know, I'm telling them, we're telling them one thing about our lives, and they see a very different version in popular culture. And I was very happy in this book to have my say, because it really was just getting, you know, pretty insufferable.
It's interesting that it was your father who first diagnosed the MS. You were describing your symptoms to him on the phone, that you were dropping things, that you were numb in some places. And your father is both a physician and he has MS, so he called you back and told you you had MS, and your father gave you the advice of, you know, don't tell anybody, or tell as few people as possible. And you said that his sense of discretion bordered on silence. Do you think he gave you good advice in trying to keep it fairly secret?
Well, I've sort of come full circle on that, and I give him more credit today than perhaps I did at the time. I really wanted to believe that there were generational differences between us and that what worked for him in his time really didn't necessarily apply to me in my time. Don't forget, he was a physician, you know, and you remember the old Aesop's fable that ended, physician, heal thyself. And I think that his concern with his own life was that people were not going to trust him to take care of them because he was flawed physically. And that may be a sad reality, but there probably was some truth to it. So, you know, the more things change, the less they change. And I think my father was probably quite astute in his advice about what you tell employers. And as I related in the book, Cronkite's old executive producer, longtime executive producer, Sandy Sokolow, who's a marvelous journalist, a man in his 70s, told me not all that long ago that he was really glad that I didn't tell him, that I hadn't told him at the beginning, because he just might not have hired me.
Journalist Richard Cohn is my guest, and he's written a new memoir, which is called Blindsided, and it's about how his life has been changed by living with MS. When you got the news, when you got the diagnosis that you had MS, which is a degenerative disease, so you knew it, and you knew this from your father too, that it was gonna get worse, not better. How did you handle the news? I mean, when you get news like that, do you have this like tape loop in your head that won't quit, that says, oh my God, MS, MS, and it's going to get worse. This is horrible. This is bad. I'm going to be in pain. I'm not going to be able to do things. Do you know what I mean? Do you have that kind of like obsessive tape loop that won't quit when you get news like that?
Well, I had what for me was a somewhat odd reaction. First of all, the news was not unexpected. Second of all, I had sort of prepared myself as much as you can for that kind of news. And I just sat back and I hung up the phone and I thought to myself, I don't know enough about MS to react. I mean, I'm not going to disintegrate. I'm not going to get upset about a condition I know so little about. And I really thought I had to put it on the shelf and was surprised by my ability to do so. And what that meant to me, and others would call that denial, but what that accomplished was buying me some time. Instead of getting thrown off my feet, it allowed me to learn what I had to learn about the disease over a period of time. And it really allowed me to maintain my emotional equilibrium, stay on my feet, and keep going in a career television news that I knew would be physically very demanding. And
so you kind of think denial isn't necessarily a bad thing, at least in the short term.
Well, I've taken a lot of grief from friends and family over the years about being in a state of denial. You know, it's one thing if you're standing on the tracks and a freight train is coming toward you and it's going rather quickly and it's a rather large train and you deny that the train's going to hit you, you know, then I think arguably denial's not such a terrific idea. But I think that at different stages of your life with less certain outcomes, I think denial is a very useful weapon, really, against falling apart emotionally. And I do think that with a range of chronic illnesses, that denial is a very useful tool because it really allows you to slow down and take stock of things.
After you got your diagnosis of MS, you continued your work as a television journalist. And in fact, you ended up in a few war zones, including Beirut and was it El Salvador?
Yes.
So here you are, diagnosed with MS, dodging bullets, diving under cars for cover. You write about this a little bit in your memoir that it kind of helped distract you in a way from your illness to put your life in jeopardy like that. But can you explain a little bit more what it was like for you to know that you were becoming increasingly vulnerable and at the same time to expose yourself to the dangers of war reporting?
Well, I think it was counterphobic behavior, meaning that I think I took what I feared the most and I went and did it. I also was really on a mission that in my mind grew reckless after some years, but it was so important to me to prove to myself that I could do what the other guy was doing, you know, that I could get out there with men and women who were putting their lives on the line, who were covering wars in dangerous situations, and pull it off. The more you can do those kinds of things, the more you can deny your problems. Look, make no mistake about one thing. I believed mightily in the news business until I reached the point where I believed the news business was failing all of us, and then I got out. But I was deeply committed to the work, and it meant all the world to me to be able to do it as fully as I could do it.
So when you were working in war zones, what symptoms had already kicked in?
Well, again, this was 20 years ago, and I was already legally blind, which was the certainly the largest limiting factor that I had to deal with every day. And, you know, and when you go out to cover an incident, whether it's in Beirut or Salvador or any number of places, obviously, you've really got to have your wits about you. You've got to be able to see clearly. Well, seeing clearly just sort of took on a different meaning for me. You know, a lot of what saved me was that, unlike a newspaper reporter, perhaps, television is a collaborative medium. You rarely went out alone. You went out with a camera crew and perhaps a correspondent. And I could rely on other people to see what I couldn't see. I dare say that in many or most cases, they really didn't know what my limitations were. I mean, I don't think that my illness was a hot topic of conversation, you know, even at CBS News, which is interesting because I just think when people are sick, it just makes, you know, it's good fodder for the gossip mill, if nothing else. But I think that the people who knew really didn't say much to anybody else, because I never got the sense from my colleagues in any of these places that they were concerned about me.
My guest is journalist Richard Cohen. His new memoir, Blindsided, is about his psychological war with illness. He was diagnosed with MS 30 years ago. Well, you know, during this period that we're talking about, you weren't really out in journalism, in terms of having MS. People didn't know about it. One of the first people you told in the business was Ted Koppel. How did it end up being him?
Well, Ted, I worked at ABC, and Ted was making a trip to China. I think his second trip after he had gone with Nixon on the initial trip that sort of opened up China to journalists. And Ted, very mindful that he was not going to get the free flow of information over there, set up a system with me where State Department people would call me, and I was 25 years old, and he was going to call me, and I was going to, in some clever way, disguise the information. It was, in retrospect, it was a little preposterous, I guess. But I was going to pass it on to him, even before he had been there probably a week. I had a major relapse. I lost vision in one eye and ended up in the hospital. And so his calls to me were patched into Georgetown Hospital instead of up to my office. All of a sudden, he wants to know, what the heck's going on? You're in the hospital. It was a very hard moment because, I hadn't even told the ABC people I was in the hospital. I was so obsessively secret that suddenly, here's Ted Koppel, he's my friend, my colleague. What am I going to say to the guy? And when I said it, of course, he couldn't hear it, so I had to shout it. It was in just a very small way, was a watershed moment because I was, in effect, coming out of the closet. I was admitting to somebody I was sick, which was something that I wanted desperately to deny myself. And, you know, it was an interesting experience, but then I just kept my mouth shut again. And I don't think he told anybody, because I think he sensed that I had confided in him. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the secret was safe for a while.
When you did tell your colleagues in the news business that you had MS, did people start to treat you any differently, professionally or personally?
Well, I didn't really. I mean, the big moment was having faked my way through a company physical, having done a sleight of hand with the eye exam in particular, where I examined my better eye twice so they wouldn't have to see what was wrong with, you know, the more damaged eye. I squeaked past the physical, and I kept the whole situation a secret. I was terrified. I didn't know how it was. You know, I can't drive anymore. Producers are supposed to be people who jump out of airplanes without a parachute and, you know, and hit the ground before anybody else comes in, the camera crew, the correspondent, whatever. And suddenly, here I am in the big time working for Walter Cronkite, and I couldn't rent a car, drive anywhere. And it was a pretty daunting experience. And I didn't tell anybody for probably 6 months until I really had a sense that I was doing well and that I was secure there. You know, however it was done, they got what they wanted. And it was very comfortable because they never once sort of wondered, is it safe for him to go there? You know, is this responsible? I think their attitude was, if he's ready to go and, you know, the guy's got a track record, then we're going to send him.
You're married to Meredith Vieira. When you met, how long did it take you to tell her about your medical condition?
Well, it was done quickly for two reasons. It was really our second date. First of all, being legally blind, it doesn't take long for a person you're with in a social situation, just in the routine ways that it happens, to realize that something's the matter. You know, I mean, you say, you know, you see that person over there, or you're in a theater, and what did you think of the sets, or what, all the things that I couldn't possibly see. So that then the questions start. And the other thing is that I just learned over a period of time that people responded very differently, and some people headed for the fire exit, and some people didn't seem to be put off by it. And if you're out to dinner, why invest in dessert, you know, if you can save the money if they're going to run?
And she didn't run.
No, she didn't run. I mean, she was taken aback, as one would expect. And, you know, Meredith and I are both sarcastic people, I think. Humor is a very important part of our lives, and she was funny about it, but we did have serious conversations. But again, she was, don't forget, she was sitting across from somebody who didn't show real signs of physical distress that would come in the years to follow. And it's very hard, I think, for any individual to almost extrapolate, to look down the road and imagine worst case scenarios. You know, if you're sitting with somebody who really, beyond my eyesight, doesn't show any signs of physical problems.
The worst case scenario for you was in some ways worse than you expected, in the sense that you not only have MS, but you've had two bouts of colon cancer, which seems like, you know, like it's really not fair. Not that fairness enters into it, but it just, you know, doesn't seem fair.
Well, my mother said to me on the phone, you know, this isn't fair. And I said, you're right, it should have been my brother. And she didn't think, she didn't think that was very funny. But it, you know, when you're sick, you know, you can say this just isn't fair, but where do you go from there? You know, I always tell people that if you can tell me who to sue, I will happily get a lawyer. But it, you know, that's just one of these things that just doesn't take you anywhere. And there's really no point in going very far. Even if you indulge yourself in a few minutes of that, it really doesn't take you anywhere. And you might as well just get off it and get on with your life.
Yeah, easier said than done. It's hard to stop thinking about stuff like that sometimes.
You know what? There's no denying that the cancer was devastating, especially the second time around. You know, I had a temporary ileostomy. I lost 30 pounds. It kicked in a lot of the MS, just the stress on my body kicked in a lot of the MS problems. And I was really a wreck physically, and came home from the hospital with anger and really despair. And there was nothing instant about the process of coping and feeling whole again emotionally.
Where are you now health-wise?
Well, my health is pretty good. Again, you know, it's always as compared to what, but I'm cancer-free. I've got a lot of gut issues that just go with, you know, the surgeries that I had and make life difficult. And the MS is a band that just keeps playing on, you know. And, you know, I have more mobility problems. I have greater problems using my arms. And my voice is, as you can probably hear, very much affected by this. My eyesight is stable. But, you know, having said all of that, I have a pretty good life. I don't feel like Job at all. I mean, if you were a fly on the wall in our house, you would hear the laughing and the fighting and see people doing their homework. And everybody in the family has got a great sense of humor. And there are no martyrs in our house. There really aren't. There's neither time nor room for that sort of state of mind. And everybody's got a job to do, and we do it.
Richard Cohn's new memoir is called Blindsided. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.